This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood to shake a leg at the largest free music festival in the Southeast, conversation with members of the New Orleans Nightingales, or a trek down memory lane with a look back at world's fairs of days gone by. It's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. The Vucaray will become ground zero this week as the largest free music fest in the Southeast, French Quarter Festival, kicks off its 30th anniversary celebration with 4 days of music. Joining me in the studio is French Quarter Festival Executive Director Marcy Schramm. Well, Marcy, welcome to Inside the Arts.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be back.
You know, it's hard to believe that French Quarter Fest is celebrating 30 years. What are your thoughts on reaching this milestone?
My first year working with the organization was the 25th anniversary, and I remember that anniversary was a very, very special year, too. There's something just about an anniversary. It causes people to reflect on the past and how far it's come and how much it's changed yet stayed the same, and it just forces people to talk about the past a little bit more, which is nice.
And speaking of the past, let's talk about the festival's humble beginnings, which I believe began under Mayor Dutch Morial's administration back in the early 80s?
It did. It was 1984. Of course, locals know it was the year of the World's Fair, and there were extensive street and sidewalk repairs in the French Quarter. Business owners were very unhappy because the construction was causing them to lose business. And so the business owners of the quarter complained to Dutch and said, you know, you have to do something. We're suffering. And so the mayor, who was brilliant, said, let's throw a party and bring the locals back. And so the whole idea was to stimulate a little bit of tourism and bring the locals back. And it was only ever meant to be a 1 year event. And so it's extra, extra thrilling to celebrate this 30th year.
Oh, my goodness. And it continues to grow. What can we look forward to this year?
We are at 21 stages of music, and we have over 1,400 musicians, local musicians, who will play the festival this year. Everyone from Irma Thomas to George Porter Jr. to the newest incarnation of Radiators called the Raw Oyster Cult, Rebirth Brass Band, and just such, such great local music. We are the largest free music festival in the Southeast.
How do you keep it free?
You know, a lot of the way we accomplish it is through people in the neighborhood who help us. There are so many people who allow us to do things that no one else would be able to do in the French Quarter. Combined with our amazing sponsors, we have this incredible group of sponsors who not only help fund the festival, but also really participate in the festival by, you know, providing things like free shuttles and the free iPhone app. That's all underwritten by our sponsors. And then in addition, we pay for the festival by selling a lot of beer. We have all the beverage and merchandise sales help fund the festival. And then in addition, there's a booth fee. All the restaurants out there pay us a flat rate for being a participant, and then they keep all their proceeds too, which is, you know, good for them and good for the local economy.
Now, you said that people in the French Quarter help you and you're able to do things that most people aren't able to do. Like what?
Well, there's a few things. The city of New Orleans, a huge, huge help and supporter and partner, really. The main stage is in Jackson Square. We are grandfathered in as the only event, annual event, that can have a festival in the square. So Jackson Square is, you know, the heart of the festival. It's the first stage of festival 30 years ago. And also just such a beautiful site. And then also, you know, the Historic New Orleans Collection in their gorgeous courtyard on Royal Street hosts a stage. Preservation Hall is a stage of the festival, and it is the one time every year where you can go to Preservation Hall during the day, and it's open, and it's free to the public. And so it's a lot of these neighborhood partnerships. They're very, very special places and sites that host the stages, and it's completely through these partnerships and friendships and the neighborhood all pitching in to make it the very, very special event that it is. Another one that has been going for a few years now is our classical music stage is at St. Mary's at the Ursuline Convent. And if you've never been to it, it is such a beautiful little church. It's never open except for weddings, and that is the home of our classical stage.
And I can only imagine a lot must go into planning an event this large.
It does. And this year, we really were thrown for some loops because of some construction happening. We had to move one of our most popular stages, the Cajun Zydeco Showcase. But sometimes through, you know, challenges, something really great comes from it. And so this year, we're launching this new stage. at the Bienville statue, and it's right in the middle of the street on Decatur. And so we're going to have a big stage on the neutral ground with Cajun Zydeco programming, and people are literally going to be dancing in the streets. I mean, the whole Decatur Street corridor through to Jackson Square will basically be a giant dance floor, and we're really excited about that. So that's a big change. And then in addition, we had to move our kids area, which is so popular. So the Riverfront Kids area is shifting down to the Natchez Wharf, and that's that beautiful wharf at Toulouse Street where the Natchez docks. It's a really large space that juts out into the water, and the kids will just have this incredible riverfront new kids area. It's a large space. It's tented, and so I think it'll be great for kids and families to really enjoy that part of the festival.
Wow. And there's something else that's new this year. You have a film component to the festival.
It's a wonderful local nonprofit called Time Code NOLA. They promote Louisiana filmmakers and new works. So basically a film festival within French Quarter Festival, free and open to the public. It'll be at the Old U.S. Mint on the third floor, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And they'll be showing some incredible documentaries. One of the ones that people are so excited about, it's an award-winning documentary called Bury the Hatchet about the Mardi Gras Indians. And then in addition, it's very rarely shown something called Piano Players Rarely Ever Play Together, which is a documentary that included Professor Longhair, Alan Toussaint, and Toots. That is something not to be missed.
And what is the economic impact of this festival to the city of New Orleans?
Well, we're still ranked as second to Mardi Gras, which is always amazes me. Last year, the French Quarter Festival had a $260 million economic impact. The only time that changes a little bit is when Super Bowl comes to town, then we're number three. So this year, we're probably number three. We find it's such a direct result of taking an event like this and producing in the middle of a living neighborhood. And so it's free. There's no charge at the gate. People come in, they spend their day listening to all this great music, but they're also spending money in the neighborhood. They're staying in the hotels, they're shopping, they're going to the restaurants, they're going to the bars. And so there's this beautiful steamroll effect of people supporting local business. And the shop owners tell us year-round that it's the best weekend of the year.
But how many people are you expecting this year?
Well, last year we had over 500,000, and the hotels have been sold out for months.
Well, sounds like a good time is going to be had by all.
Everything is free and open to the public. The fireworks are still Saturday night. We're bringing, for 30th anniversary, we're bringing back an evening concert series, which is an event that used to be part of the festival that went away years ago, with some really great big name talents. It's about Beau Soleil and Dirty Dozen Brass Band and Terrence Simeon. And every year we add and change things a little bit to keep it really fresh. And so I just think the schedule can be really overwhelming. Our app is amazing. If people can download the free app, it's the complete music schedules, the complete menus with menu items and pricing, the map of the French Quarter. I just encourage people really to get that app or go to our website and see everything there is to do, and also to ride the free shuttle. I mean, as you know, the French Quarter now is closed to traffic. And so to see the French Quarter as a completely pedestrian neighborhood is a beautiful thing, but it also is challenging. So RTA is doubling the amount of streetcars and buses, and all that great public transportation will be running, including our free shuttle service, which goes from the CBD and drops off right near the festival. And people can catch that and have $10 fixed rate parking on O'Keefe Street in the Central Business District.
All right. Marcy, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We've been talking with French Quarter Festival Executive Director Marcy Schramm. The French Quarter Festival runs Thursday through Sunday, opening at 11 a.m. each day. More info on the web at fqfi.org. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO. I'm Diane Mack. One of the many star-studded acts to grace the Jackson Square stage on the opening day of French Quarter Fest will be the New Orleans Nightingales Review, the brainchild of New Orleans singer, songwriter, and producer Ingrid Lucia.
Down home, where your mama's waiting to love you with no hesitating, come along, down home.
Lucia's latest project, a compilation CD featuring 19 New Orleans female vocalists, resulted in the formation of the Nightingales. Ingrid, welcome to Inside the Arts.
Thank you, Diane.
You must be very excited as your latest project has really taken off.
It really has, and it's been a complete surprise. We had planned to do the compilation only, and opportunities kept rolling in on their own accord, and here we are a year later, having played some of the best festivals and new opportunities arising and coming in, and we're all connected and bonding. It's been really, really wonderful.
Let's remind the audience of the project and how it came about.
Well, basically, I was thinking about the fact that all of us ladies here in New Orleans are all doing the same job on our own accord, and that maybe there's a way that we can cross-current each other's efforts and help each other out and connect and commune and make a marker in time, kind of like that picture in Harlem in the 50s. You know, it's a marker where who knows where we'll all be in 10, 15, 20 years, but we're here now and we're ready to share it.
And I see you've brought a few of the ladies with you this afternoon. Hello.
Hello. Hi, Diane.
So, who's in the studio with me?
I'm Debbie Davis.
Jana Morgan.
And Sophie Lee.
Well, let's start with you. Debbie, do you know what you might be singing on Thursday?
I may be singing an Irving Berlin song called You'd Be Surprised.
Johnny was bashful and shy. Nobody understood why Mary loved him. All the other girls passed him by.
It was a song that was written by Irving Berlin in 1917, before the censors had changed the way writers and filmmakers were allowed to express themselves. And it's a song about a guy who has certain attributes that are mysterious and wonderful. They're not visible to the eye. Both my parents were opera singers, so I grew up in a household full of music and singing. And we spent a lot of time driving from place to place. Both my parents worked all over the country. And so I sat in the back of the car singing harmonic parts to whatever opera piece they were learning. I'd learn the vocal part, and then I'd learn the flute part, and then I'd learn the bassoon part, and I'd learn the French horn part, and they didn't know what I was singing back there, but I was just figuring stuff out because I didn't have anything else to do. So they kind of sealed my fate where that was concerned. And as I grew older, I did a lot of musical theater. I was in a couple of rock bands. I was in a ska band, and I gravitated toward jazz because it seemed over and over that was the one kind of music that everybody wanted to listen to in some context or another.
And Jana, you're going to be singing also?
I'll be singing Ball in the Jack, which is a tune also off of the Nightingales compilation CD.
First you bring your two knees close and tight. Swing them to the left and swing them to the right. Walk around the floor, kind of nice and light. Then you twist around and twist around with all of your might. Spread those loving arms way out in space. Do the eagle rock with style and grace. Put your left foot out and bring it back.
Calling to sing?
I did. I was an opera major in college, so that was my studies and my degree. So I've had classical training. I just didn't do jazz until I came back home to New Orleans and decided this was the kind of jazz I wanted to sing. Lots of old traditional New Orleans jazz with a Storyville bump and grind feel.
And Sophie Lee.
So I will be there Thursday with the rest of the Gales. I will be doing a song called I Will Love You. It's a song that I wrote for my last CD, Love Street Lullaby. A song I wrote for my daughters.
I will love you all my heart. I will love you and never stop. With the breath of my soul from my head to my toes, I will love you.
I actually went to Classical Piano Conservatory in Chicago at the DePaul School of Music. And somewhere in my junior, senior year when you're about to declare either piano performance or teaching, my piano coach sort of ungracefully told me that I didn't have what it took to be a concert pianist and I should probably look elsewhere. I walked out, quit the music school and picked up a guitar and started a rock band.
Good for you.
Yeah. And did that for about 5 years, and self-taught myself the guitar and started writing songs, and really kind of went the opposite of classical music and started writing my own songs, you know, for about 5, 6, 7 years until my mother got sick, and then we moved to the South and I kind of took a break from music. But somewhere in that break, I decided that if I was going to keep writing songs, that I sort of needed to inform my songwriting with standards and classics, and to immerse myself in that, the move to New Orleans made perfect sense. I think French Quarter Fest, there will be 14 of us rather than the whole 19. And then at the end, there will be a group song, which will be...
Don't tell them.
Oh, it's a surprise. Never mind.
What happens?
Yes. So you have to come to the show to find out.
No, we won't spoil their surprise. We've been talking with Ingrid Lucia, Debbie Davis, Sophie Lee, and Jaina Morgan, members of the New Orleans Nightingales Review, who will perform at the French Quarter Festival on the Jackson Square stage Thursday at 5 p.m.
In my arms, I will hold you, never stop, until the evening fades, until the morning breaks, I will hold you, and I...
And we're going to step back in time now, with a look at World's Fairs of Days Gone By. The New Orleans Museum of Art is opening an exhibit Friday of decorative items put on display at World's Fairs. Eileen Fleming stopped by as the pieces were being set up.
Think of a World's Fair, and images of monorails, futuristic architecture, and unusual foods may come to mind. But back in the day, a World's Fair was a showcase of commerce and art. The NOMA exhibit features works seen at fairs from 1851 to 1939. NOMA spokeswoman Lisa Rotondo McCord strolled around the packing boxes to highlight what's in store for visitors. Pick out a few things and tell me what we're going to be seeing.
There's a very large silver vase called the Tennyson Vase that greets you when you walk into the exhibition. And it is just a marvel of silver craftsmanship. It tells the story of King Arthur, scenes from the life of King Arthur, including this amazing battle scene, which is the first thing you see when you walk in the exhibition. And then the death of King Arthur is shown on the back. It's incredibly elaborate, very ornate. The chainmail is sort of all individually crafted. So you can imagine just the amount of labor and effort that went into this piece and the expense that it engendered.
It's from England and was made in 1857. In 1984, New Orleans hosted the last World's Fair that included the participation of the United States. Now they're mostly held in South America and Asia as a showcase of new technology. They may seem a bit of a relic now to the days before the World Wide Web came into being.
People will say now that the internet is a World's Fair. I mean, it's the world's marketplace. You want to see something great. But in a World's Fair environment, wonderful things are selected for you. So, you know, if you Google something, it's a very democratic kind of process. The best of the best doesn't necessarily pop up first at the head of the list. But in a World's Fair, each nation chose the best that they had to offer, the most innovative, the most technologically advanced, something that dealt with the natural resources of their country. So it was curated, essentially, for you.
Around the corner are delicate cast iron chairs, not something commonly associated with cast iron. A few exhibits later is a dressing table and stool made by Gorham in 1899 that one could imagine only in Hollywood.
The entire table and mirror frame. And
everything is sterling silver, yes. And we are fortunate enough to have patrons of the museum who have the scent bottles that were created for the table.
Did someone actually use this table?
Yes, somebody did. Uh-huh, yep. No, many of these things, they were shown at the fairs, but they were meant to be purchased at the fairs.
In the final room are pieces of furniture and glassware that not only look like art, but versions of the sleek motifs are likely for sale today. It was 1939, the time of Art Deco, and the world was heading into war.
it just seemed a logical stopping point. And the fairs that happened after that dealt more with sort of international trade or agricultural products or technological innovations. So they felt that this was sort of the classic era where the decorative arts really embodied the interests and the primary motivations behind the fairs, that these decorative arts are the last remaining manifestation of the fairs.
The exhibit includes about 200 items selected from the fairs, starting in London in 1851 and ending at the 1939 World's Fair in New York. It's open from Friday through August 4th. For WWNO, I'm Eileen Fleming.
And we have something extra in our Lanyap Corner. Junebug Productions presents Lockdown. Set in the context of the privatization of public schools, Lockdown is an original play that explores the impact of education reform in New Orleans post-Katrina. The play follows five adults who struggle to navigate this changing educational landscape in different ways. Created collaboratively by artists working in the public education system, this piece uses traditional scenes, spoken word, and original music. Lockdown premieres April 11th and runs through April 21st at the Ashe Cultural Arts Center, 1712 Aretha Castle Haley Boulevard. Performances at 7:30 p.m. And Film-O-Rama, presented by the New Orleans Film Society, continues at the Britannia Theater. The Spring Festival features independent and classic films from around the globe through April 11th. More info on the web, neworleansfilmsociety.org. That's our show for this week. Inside the Arts is a production of WWNO. Our program is archived at wwno.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette next Tuesday at 1 p.m. when we'll go inside the arts. I'm Diane Maddox.